At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, welcome to the Shut Your Face podcast with your host, me, Bree. I'm super excited you guys are here. Thank you so much for listening to this shit show. This is the second season, and I couldn't be more thankful for all of our guests that took the time to talk to me. It's so freaking cool. Go check us out on Patreon for early access and exclusive content. And then lastly, thank you so much to our sponsors, Bemar Media and Leather and Lights. I kind of happen to know them just a little bit. They're pretty cool. Anyways, let's get on into it, shall we?
Hey, it's Brianna. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Are you ready to talk about all the things you already talk about?
I am. This morning I got up and my horses needed their teeth floated and we lived. The colt didn't drag anybody and I'm like, okay, great. The day is going to go perfect.
Don't jinx it.
Well, I'm inside the house now. What can go wrong? The horses are loose. Oh. Everybody's alive.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, first of all, thank you for taking the time to do this, number one. Number
Absolutely.
Two, you, my friend, are running a pretty big little ordeal called Indian Creek Productions, correct?
Indian Creek Racing Productions.
Indian Creek Racing Productions.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. You've got some big things going on.
We do. Believe it or not, most of it's kind of an accident. But, you know, we just keep rolling with it and things keep working. And I'm like, here we are.
So what led to you doing this? What do you mean by it was an accident? Like, tell me a little bit of how you even got to this spot.
So when we talk about how this all kind of started, I started the business in pretty much the worst year that you ever could, which was 2020. At the time in Northeast Missouri, we didn't really have any solid barrel racing companies. There was a couple small ones, but COVID really kind of shut things down. I couldn't, you know, claim fame that I developed the concept, but we adapted the concept to work for us because in our county, they had a rule where you couldn't have more than 20 people in a place at one time. So with that restriction, we developed for us a session format where we lived or where we were at and we ran our races in sessions. And we would tell the people that they had to come in. We'd have 20 expos in the beginning and then 20 runs, but you had to come in, do your expo, do your run, and you had to head out and you had to leave. People actually got to really liked to get out, but it kept us within restrictions so they couldn't shut us down.
Right.
And they really liked it because they're like, I know that I'm going to run my expos at 1 o'clock and my run will be at 1:30. So they, especially people with these little kids, they could come in, they could run, they could leave. So that's kind of where it started because for us there was just kind of this, you know, just this hole. And I was like, you know, I think we can fill it. But then I kept doing it. And I was like, I kind of like it. And it just kind of grew from there. So
that's really organized compared to the traditional kind of format. I mean, nothing's wrong with the traditional format, but
it has its ups and downs. When it worked perfectly, and I will say a lot of this would have to be with me being a very rookie producer at the time. But when the sessions are full, it's great. Like, it runs like clockwork. But what we ran into with people, because we didn't make them prepay, because, I mean, I was not set up for that kind of stuff at the time, and people would book sessions and then not show up. Then you'd have downtime, and you'd make your days really long for your staff. When a barrel race could have been done in 3 hours, it was taken 6 or 7 because of the broke-up sessions. And after that, we finally got to a size where it just wasn't feasible anymore. But it was definitely a great way to start and kind of learn the ins and outs of it for sure.
Now, did you grow up around rodeo and barrel racing?
I did not. You know, I count myself very fortunate because a lot of these people that are really successful in the business are born into it. I had read this article somewhere, who knows how much credence you can actually put in it, but they say that, you know, horse people just are born with this like genetic mutation that just makes us gravitate towards horses in general. And I mean, I am 100% first generation. I mean, my mother had horses as a child. We had trail horses, nothing special, but as far as like competitiveness, you know, competitively, no, I was not born into the family of that. So I actually started competitive racing in like 2016, 2017. And that's where I started. So honestly, I've only been on the competitive side of it for about, you know, less than 10 years. Had horses all my life, did the 4-H fun show thing, but competitively, yeah, I'm actually kind of new to it. In retrospect, compared to some people that are doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that is kind of interesting because I've always kind of thought, I've kind of noticed, observed, like most of people that are very successful in horses didn't necessarily grow up around it. And it seems like it's just you have that extra drive to want to learn more about it, which kind of makes you in turn more successful, most of those people.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely different. You know, there's a lot of elements inside the industry that, Just to say, you have a leg up if you know the people, and I definitely have come in not knowing the people, so I've had to start from scratch, but it's been, you know, very interesting.
Don't feel bad. Yeah, don't feel bad. None of us know the people, you know. Nobody knows
so
the people.
I'm
going
to have to tell you a story about some people that are people that I didn't know were people, and the amount of just oh, man. So we got our very first KK run for Vegas sanction at our Buttercup show in Gifford. My genius self, I just didn't even think about what KK, you know, stood for. Oh, that's Kelly Kaminsky? Yeah, okay. So I'm just texting back and forth with this woman for a couple weeks and have no idea who she is. And I finally look her up and I'm like, oh my God, you just been acting like this is just like, you know, the grocery store attendant or something. You had no idea you were talking to Kelly Kaminsky. I just hate myself right now. So.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna ask a dumb question, but who is that?
She is a NFR qualifier. She has run the KK Run for Vegas. I think it kind of runs in conjunction with the NFR, you know, kind of the big 10-day race. And it's a big youth race up in Vegas. Like, I knew the race, but I didn't, know the promoter until I looked her up, and I was like, oh, boy. And they let you run barrel races. I'm like, it's embarrassing, you know? It's like, you know, I'm not a big sports person, but I know who Michael Jordan is, right?
Right,
and, you know,
right.
You may not be a big horse person, but most people are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of Charmaine James. Well, I would put Kelly kind of in the same category, and I'm just over here acting like, you know, she's my neighbor, and we've been talking all the time, and I'm like, you got a little bit too casual on that one, but it's fine. It's fine.
Well, I think it's a breath of fresh air talk, just in the little time that I've known you, you know, a breath of fresh air to talk to you because, like, we're all human. Like, we're all trying to just do the best that we can. Like, you're going to make a mistake. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. Like, let's focus on the solution. And I've met a lot of people in the industry that don't think like things like that. And it's nice because, you know, it's just like I was having a conversation about a week or two ago. At the end of the day, all of this, barrels, racing, raining, cutting, all of it, it's for fun at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I applaud the people that can make, like, a career out of just racing, but at the end of the day, it's just a very small piece in the puzzle of what having a career in the industry is. Like, if you can do it, hats off to you, but most of us, it's just it's a weekend warrior thing, and even the people that are making a career at the barrel racing side of it, they've got other pieces that are really taking care of stuff because we know it's the running around for three cans that's not paying the bills. It's a great time, but.
But I guess to keep that, I guess what I'm trying to say is to keep that lighthearted mentality will keep you successful no matter what direction you want to go. You know, it's just not
absolutely.
That serious at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you take it that serious, it just becomes where it's not fun. And
right.
There's just so many other ways that I've, just me personally, that I have found to you know, create joy and find enjoyment within barrel racing besides the horse side of it. I still do it and I still love it, but, you know, I'm on the 5D rocket donkey now, but I'm finding more fun with that than I am with my 1 and 2D horse that I let go because I wanted to focus on the production instead of, you know, the horse side as much. But
oh, I bet that was a big decision.
Well, so this little, I'm not going to say little mare, there's nothing little about this mare if you want to measure her wither or her attitude. Definitely an athlete, definitely a winner. And I mean, that mare, she is probably the most fun horse I've ever run. But the other 95% of it, I was like, you know, I thought being a 1 and 2D rider would be a lot more fun than this. And barrel racing, about 5% of it is performance. And the other 95%, if you're not having a good time, that's not the horse for you. And I've always lived and died by that because, I tell people, I'm like, you know, here's the thing. If we have a bad boyfriend, what do? We get rid of him. We don't keep him. We don't keep that boyfriend.
Right, right.
And horses are the same way. You know, this might be a better boyfriend for someone else, and this might be that he might become the greatest man in the whole world, but he's not going to be a good one for you. So it's okay to cut him loose and find you something better because it'll be better for them too. So
I applaud that statement.
Yep. I was like, you know, maybe don't change your horses like underwear, but the same breath, you know, if they don't work after 2 years, it's okay. Cut them loose. It's all right. There's another one.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because you are right. Like, it's like people get really caught up on, okay, well, they're bad this, they're bad that. No, maybe it's just not a good fit. Like, it's okay if it's just not a good fit. It doesn't have to be an actual finger pointing reason, even when it comes to boyfriend or horse. Like, okay, well, y'all just aren't a good fit. It's okay.
Exactly.
No big deal. Move right along.
Yeah, this mare I had, I mean, she came leaps and bounds from when I got her. But then she got to a certain point where I was like, this is all we're ever going to do together. Like, this is it. And, you know, I got her healthy. I got her well. She was performing great. But I was like, this is all I can offer her as a rider. So I sold her. And then the kid that bought her ended up, like, you know, besting me in every single arena by, like, 4/10 immediately. And I was like, and then finishing, like, in the top 10 every single run. I was like, I knew I was right. But,
well, let me ask you this. So what brought you to that decision, though? Was it because you and her weren't meshing together, or was it because the production company and the races were getting bigger and bigger? Which one was more of an attention grabber, I guess?
Well, it really kind of went down to this, you know, and I think this is what kind of defines those true career riders versus the weekend warriors. You know, it's just physics. How much you weigh, how good in shape you are, how good your horse is in shape, like all of those different things factor in to, you know, that thousandth of a second that matter on the clock, whether you're going to win or you're going to lose. And at the end of the day, I just had to ask myself, I was like, okay, well, you know, I could lose 25 pounds, get in amazing shape, do all these things, but, you know, that's a whole nother level of dedication where you've got to focus on your fitness and what you're eating and all of those things to be that perfect in shape athlete to match your horse. And not now, but at that time, I was working a full-time job plus also doing production. And I'm like, I can't take on a whole other job of making myself this premier athlete to match this horse. Like, I just can't. And the production means more to me than it does to be a 1D top of the whatever rider. Like, it just meant more to me. So I let the horse go so I could focus on the production.
So the production basically was growing, and that was where you kind of had to make one of those fork in the moment, like standing in the fork of the road kind of moments, like, okay, do I go this way or do I go this way?
Yeah. Do I chase the Betty dream and let this fall to the wayside, or do I see what production has got for me? Because at the end of the day, I mean, I'm never going to be an NFR rider. Most of us aren't. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it to that level. So giving it that level of dedication really doesn't make sense to me. So I kind of just came to this conclusion for me. I was like, do I want to be a 1D writer? Do I want to be a 1D producer? And that was just kind of a no-brainer. So that's why I initially let the horse go. But, you know, we all come to those conclusions sometimes.
Those are hard decisions to make, though. Those are hard conclusions to come to. But it's good that you had something on each side. You know, some people don't have anything on the other side to have to choose from. And obviously, you made a good choice because, you know, your shows are continuing. They're continuously have grown since you started it. You've got how many now? And they're all 3-day events. You've got how many lined up for 2025?
Oh, man, you know, I should know the answer to that question, but I'm going to say
I got 12.
Yeah, I was going to say 12 three-day events, and then we've got a couple of big one-day events. We've got our high-stakes race, which will be the third year for that, with its $1,000 entry fee. That one's always interesting. We're going to do a fraternity, a one-day fraternity, and then we've also got a high-stakes race set up in Kansas. So we're going west a little bit this year.
So what, okay, so you just made me think about something. Now, when you say that these races are in conjunction with, like, Better Barrel Races and the Women's Professional Rodeo, IBRA, do those, does that distinguish where you're at as far as when you have the race, or is it just like they just go where you go?
So basically, each one of those different organizations, I just have to turn in an application to them just with the different details of the race, you know, where it's at, the added money, stalls, RVs, just basic information like that. And then they decide whether they want to approve it, essentially, and they call it co-sanction with me. And as far as like WPRA, IBRA right now is kind of split down the middle of the country. It's kind of like Mideast. BBR is very, very, very central right now, and south. But I basically just apply for those sanctions. They either approve them or they don't. And then when members of those associations run at our shows, they get points. So I've always kind of had the theory that, especially with the way the economy's been over the last couple of years, me personally, if I'm going to go to a show, I want to get as much out of it as I can. So I like to sanction for me personally. I'm a BBR member. I'm an IBRA member. Bonus race finals is open to anybody. So, like, I like to have those sanctions available. So it's like, okay, well, if I'm going to drive to the show, not only do I have a chance to win money and prizes, but I can also get points for these different associations that I'm in. So I'm getting more bang for my buck, essentially. So all of those, they can go just about anywhere. There's not really, like, state restrictions as to like, which ones they can we can apply for.
Got you. So they just basically say, we'll approve this, and the people that are members of their association will get credit for when they go to your show.
Yep, that's it. That's how it works.
Okay. I know that was a dumb question, but I just kind of wanted to, like, clarify it a little better, because you never know. It's better to ask than it is to assume.
Of course.
Now, you don't plan, you just said a minute ago that you're moving a little bit outside of Missouri. What kind of ideas, places that you want to go within the next, by the end of 2025 or maybe even within the next 5 years? Are you wanting to expand even further?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think right now our 2025 is pretty full. We might do a couple of, like, local jackpots that are closest at home, just because now that I'm going full-time, that's easy. Whereas before it was like, yeah, can I get off school fast enough to get there before expos? But, you know, this year we're going to have our first date in Kansas, which I would love to get over in Topeka. That place kind of holds a special place in my heart. You know, when I first started racing in, well, I guess it was technically 16, the first race, I mean, it was literally, you know, your backyard arena, and I definitely had the rainbow tack, and we were running, like, in the 70 and, you know, whatever, just trying to, like, live life. And then 2017, I was like, I'm going to go to a big race. So I packed my mare up at the time, my 18-year-old paint mare, the Indian Creek mare, drove it to Topeka in my three-horse plant with a tack room and slept underneath my saddle rack. And it was the first time I'd ever been to a big show. And, of course, I was by myself and pulled big checks, which is in Topeka at a Go for Broke show. So I want to go there. Like, that place is pretty special to me. But Topeka would be a goal. I'd love to go to the Sand Hill Event Center, which is in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's got the dual arenas in it, so you could run two shows at a time, which is pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that would be a heyday for you.
Oh, I would lose it. I mean, I've already got ideas for it.
No, I mean that as a compliment. You would be able to – no, you definitely strike me as the person that would be able to – you would thrive in that, because – you strike me as somebody that, like, does, I don't want to say better, but you operate better at a faster pace, like, when you have a lot going on. I'm kind of the same way. Like, if I'm slow, if things are slow, it's like I'm dumb. Versus when things are, like, fast and moving fast, you got a lot going on, it's like I'm sharper. I feel like you're the same way.
thrive in stress. Like, I'm my best yes. when I'm stressed out and overworked. So, like, you know, we've been yes. trying to do a t-shirt thing, and it's been a little slow around here, so, like, trying to get that together has been a struggle. So, you know.
But, no, I mean, I feel like you thrive in stress. That's the best way that I've heard anybody say it.
Yes. No, it's true. I've definitely had people, because, like I said, up until my last day at my other full-time job is March 28th, and people are like, how do you do it? And I'm kind of like, well, I don't know. I never haven't ever not done it. Like, I don't know. I've worked two jobs since I was, like, 14 years old, and I'm 38 now. So I'm like, I don't know how to not do that, you know, just not be working yeah. all the time. But, you know, we're ready for that transition, I think, especially with the traveling these other shows are going to entail. So it's time.
That was
it's
my
time
next
to have
question.
One job.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we kind of talked about it the first time we spoke, how you are making kind of that big step. Well, it's not a big step because you're obviously really, really, really busy, but that is a big step to make that decision to go from, I don't want to say comfortable, but comfortable to unknown a little.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, growing up, I had, you know, four brothers, counting myself, two brothers and then the two sisters. And my dad was an insurance salesman and my mom was a teacher. And, you know, we just didn't have any money. I think that's kind of why I started working early because, you know, I had to buy my own clothes and sometimes I had to buy my own food. We just didn't have a lot. So even though, like, I know that this production is, and I've sat there and run the numbers, and I'm just like, you know, and my school job is great, but it's like any school job, you know, it's not a huge paying job. Is it secure? Yes. Would it always be there? It does have good health insurance. They are pretty flexible because I have essentially run my barrel raising business at work when I have downtime. So it's hard to give up that real sure thing, but it's, you know, you have that choice. Do I just live that normal, easy, mediocre life that 95% of people live? Or do you step out and do you do the hard thing and take the chance of doing something great? Because that's one thing about the barrel racing scene that's tough is, like, it doesn't wait for you. Like, you've got to keep going. And I have found, especially now, and that was kind of the breaking point for me, is that with the school job, I just couldn't travel hardly out of a 4-hour radius because I had to be back to work on Monday. And I'm like, I can't go to these new arenas because I don't have the travel time to go do it. And I was like, it's either this is all we're going to do and we're going to settle for this, or we're going to try for the thing that most people never get a chance to do. And I'm like, well, I'll never just ever get over it if I don't try. So I'm like, we've
right.
got to take a chance. So that's kind of
how that went. I'm a huge believer in it's better to try and say you tried and failed or succeeded than it is to not even. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? It's better to, you'll never know the answer if you don't ever ask. So you'll
Absolutely.
Never know if you try it.
Yep. Yeah, I had it was early January. And I sat down with one of my sponsors, Madrina's Coffee, and they're also one of my biggest, coffee.
I'm Googling this. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, girl, let me tell you, buy it all. It's so good. Love it.
I'm all but, this right now. Well, I saw the logo on the shirt, and I didn't even, I was like, I'm like, what is that? But I didn't think past any of that. So, okay, go ahead. I'm going to Google this. I got to find this.
Oh, you're good. But, you know, they're real good friends of mine now, and, you know, we've been friends for several years, and I was like, and, you know, they are incredible business people, and we went out to dinner, I said, what do I do? And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, what do I do? And they're like, take a bet on yourself. They're like, do you realize that every person that has ever done anything great, it wasn't easy. You know that, right? And they're like, what you're doing isn't easy, but, like, take a bet on yourself, because the thing is, whether it's barrel racing or a product or whatever it is, you know, you're the first person to believe in that thing. And if you don't believe in it, how are you going to sell it? So, you know, they kind of were like, because I wish, that would be somebody really cool to have an interview with, because this was one of those, like, you know, not a good home life, living out of a car at 16. You know, somebody took them under their wing, taught them business, and the way that the things that they've developed is just absolutely incredible to listen to these people talk. Like, we had a business meeting a couple weekends ago, and we all got together kind of, you know, working on the 2025 year, and he was up early in the morning, and I was like, hey, you know, how are you? And he'd already made coffee, you know, obviously made coffee. And I was like, what are you? And he's like, oh, I just bought a truckload of oranges. And I was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? But, you know, besides the coffee, they also do, like, a lot of juices and, you know, they do sodas, you know, things like that. So he had just, like, he's like,
I'm on their website now. This is some cool stuff. Like, it's
But, yeah, he was up buying oranges because he's like, I don't know, told me something about the weather and this had dropped and that had dropped and orange prices went down. So he was snagging them before they went back up, you know, so he could have orange juice concentrate. And I was like, okay. I'm just saying, like, just like, you know, we talk about how we're like next level in the way we think. He's next level. And I'm just like, all right, cool. Like, you're up at 5 a.m. buying oranges.
It's, you know what, this is really cool that you're talking about this, because I have, you've probably had situations where people say things to you that make you feel like what you're doing is crazy, it's out there. They make you second guess what you're doing in order to succeed, in order to chase those goals and those dreams. And then you turn around and you get around somebody like him, and they make you feel like you're not doing enough.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Like,
that was, yes, words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, and I love those people like him that you're talking about, because you can easily get sucked into that normal, I don't want to say normal, that's the wrong word, that negative mentality that wants to pull you back. Like, there'll always be somebody out there that'll go, oh, well, sleep in a little bit, or, oh, you're doing too much, or, oh, you know, they'll make you second guess what you're doing. And so it's really nice to have people like him in your life that'll go, they'll literally, like, slap you in the face, like, okay, you know what? I'm not doing enough, actually.
You're right. So. I should have been up at 5 o'clock buying oranges, you know? Like, dang, I was not prepared.
Right. He's got some good, he's got some good flavors, like butter cake and cinnamon churro.
Do it. Oh, one of my favorites, if you're doing the cold brew, is the Mississippi Mud. But if you're going to do the beans, because they do these beans in small batches, and I like, only make like 50 bags at a time because they're all like hand roasted. Valhalla vanilla, it's like vanilla and rum. Like, my God, life changing. But my favorite is Kona. Those beans come out of Hawaii and they're very limited supply. So it's the bougie coffee, in my opinion. And it is only available here and there. And I'm like, I need that. And anytime they come in, I'm like, no, you give me 10 bags right now. I don't care about the other customers. I need it worse.
This is so, I want to try this because I do coffee reviews, and this is going to be really fun. And this, I'm going to try some of this. I had no idea this episode would turn into this, but this is really cool.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, you know, that's the thing. I like to think of myself as very dynamic, and you just never know where the conversation's going to go.
Well, I mean, I think it's great. Back to you, though. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, just kind of about, again, how you got to where you're at and, you know, all that good stuff. With you not growing up around barrel racing, you grew up around, you know, fun shows and 4-H and stuff like that. Was it a hard transition from you to kind of go from that atmosphere to the fast-paced, timed event atmosphere, or was that just an easy transition for you?
Well, I mean, I did do like 4-H, you know, FFA stuff. So, I mean, I had done speed events before, obviously not divisional money, you know, that caliber. I mean, if I had to really, and one thing that a lot of people don't know, and, you know, because this will be year 6 for us, and I do get this question or remark a lot where people are like, you know, how are you doing this? How did you do this so fast? You know, how, I don't understand, like, where did you come from kind of thing, which, you know, based on the kind of paces of people with growth in the industry, ours does seem really fast. But what a lot of people don't know is that I've actually been working in production for about 10 years. I started, I mean, just like, you know, most of these people did, started at the ground level. I mean, I actually was a professional barrel setter for half a minute there. You know, I worked for Barrel Bash and BBR bonus race, and there was actually a group of friends that traveled together, you know, back when gas was like $1.15, and we'd all haul together. Yeah, I know.
Good day.
Yeah, but we'd all haul together, and we'd stay in the trailer, and then we'd set barrels all weekend, and, you know, our entry fees would be paid, and it didn't hardly cost anything to get up down the road with all of us traveling together. So we did that for about 3 years. And that kind of turned into some other job opportunities for me. I ran social media for Carnival of Cannes a couple times, which is a real great show that we have in Missouri. And then that also segued into my social media management for Gopher Broke Productions, which I did that for several years. You know, and those connections with those producers, I kind of got a sense of how shows ran and like what a good show should look like and just how to treat people in general. You know, it didn't take long to go to the different shows and, you know, because I think the producer set the tone for the atmosphere of the show, whether people are going to be happy or angry or whatever it is. Like, it's your job to kind of create the atmosphere. And I got to work with some really, really great producers, Lindy Johnson, which she's up in Iowa Gopher Broke, and she's also kind of helped me get started on IBRA that I took up last year. Connie Dove, I have a special heart in my, or place in my heart for her. You know, she was the first producer that ever, like, really backed me and, like, helped me get started, you know, and just people like that kind of got me into, like, the fine points of production, because there is no manual on this. Like, you're literally just making it up as you go. So, you know, that kind of, you know, I had a foundation when I started, and the rest of it I've just kind of had to learn on the way. So I've had about 10 years, but 6 years of my own.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, well, that just goes back to general discussion of how people think that success is overnight, but that overnight is, like you said, 10 years overnight. You know, sometimes people they just see what they see in front of their face, and they see absolutely nothing that's behind it, and the years and the mistakes you had to make, the lessons you had, all that stuff. People don't see all of that usually.
Yeah. There's been some doozies. I would say I'm going to write a book when I retire. I'm going to release it and change the names and then move to Jamaica. Like, that's my plan. It'll be a bestseller.
Well, going into that, what's probably one of the most memorable lessons that you think you had to learn that you didn't foresee coming?
God, there's so many. You know, I think one of the things, and I preach this because I've done this for 3 or 4 years where we have ambassadors or sponsored riders that we sponsor through our production. And one of the things that I always really try to reiterate to these girls is, like, you know, you need to be careful what you say, because what you say in Missouri is going to get heard down in Texas. You know, the United States is big, but the horse community is small. And the good that you do and the bad that you do, people are going to hear it. So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I've never made mistakes. I would pride myself on the fact that the mistakes that I've made have just been honest mistakes, and I've learned from them and, you know, changed my procedures to never make them again. But, you know, they did still happen. But, you know, it's always very heartening to me when I bump into somebody, you know, like you. It's like, hey, I heard about you. And they're like, I've heard nothing but good things, which is really great because, I mean, sometimes I think that ignorance is bliss, because I don't want to know all the things that people say or think about me or my production, because it can be very dehumanizing. They look at you more like a product than a person. And, you know, that can be really tough and really wear on you mentally and emotionally. So most of the time I'm like, I don't want to know, and I don't ask, don't tell me. Just if there's a problem we need to fix, let me know. If there's not, I don't want to hear it. It's fine. Just keep it to yourself. But when someone's like, hey, we've only heard good things, I'm like, all right, great. We're, you know, go in the right direction. But learning when to open my mouth and learning when to keep it shut has definitely been a learning curve, because I'm a very honest, open person. But, you know, you don't always got to tell all the things you know. So that's probably my biggest lesson that I've learned in the last several years.
Yeah, I literally had this discussion with a girl last week about how, you know, it's not everybody has the same heart as you. And so, you know, it's one thing to think, to know that you're a good person, you do things right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to speak that out to somebody else who doesn't have the best interest for you. You know, like, just put on your rose-colored glasses and think, okay, well, I don't have any enemies, nobody's going to come for me. That's not a way to live. You got to be able to be realistic.
I wish it
is what it is. You know, it sucks, but it is what it is, and it's in every business, you know. So that's one of the things that I have had to learn, is just accept the fact that some people are just crappy people. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yep. Just watch yours, and I always try to keep, I don't want to ever, like, I feel like there's this kind of epidemic in the industry where a lot of producers come off as not very nice. But on the other flip side of that, I also understand why. It's because they have been absolutely abused by the public. So they're kind of, you know, protecting themselves, which I get. But I just always pray that that doesn't happen to me, that I can always keep an open heart and open mind, protect myself when I need to, but in the same breath also be a human to these people, because sometimes that's what they need. You know, they need you to be there and help them with whatever the situation is. And a little kindness can go a real long way, which I think is why we've been successful, honestly.
Yeah. I think that those are great things to live by. And you're right. You can get sucked into that mentality of, I don't want to say just a negative mentality, but you can get sucked into, you know, if you have a couple of people over here that say something bad versus 20, 30 people over here that are saying stuff good. Because nobody's going to please everybody. It's impossible. Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. That's for sure.
So you could get really tired real quick trying to please everybody.
Yeah, I also had to learn that lesson real hard. But yeah, that's definitely a tough thing. But I'm definitely one of those people, like 99 people could tell me they loved it and one person would be like, I hate it. And that's the one I get fixated on, which I wish I wasn't that way. But it's just the way my brain works. But I always try to take those situations and be like, okay, you know, sometimes you'll hear a rumor or, you know, something that somebody was unhappy about or whatever. And what I've always tried to tell myself is like, okay, there probably is a grain of truth in that somewhere. So instead of being upset about it, let's look at it and see how we can make something better based on this information. And that has actually helped me a lot, because I've been able to kind of, you know, clean up things that maybe were a little unclear, or, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that actually, even though I don't like the way this is being said to me, I'm like, okay, we actually could do better in this realm. So anytime I would say, honestly, some of our best ideas and some of our best shows have been from criticism, because I took that and I was like, all right, we're going to make that better then. And we did. So.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you've got to be able to do that, but I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. So I sponsored this couple, and I only spoke to the girl once, and I did nothing wrong to them. And she was telling people I was weird, and they were showing my work as somebody else doing it.
Oh, jeez.
I know, yeah. Right? So here's what I rely on, and this has helped me, because I actually had somebody ask me, how are you still in business after everything that's happened? Well, because I have something called the truth on my side.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, it just is what it is. And, you know, yes, obviously you want to take criticism and you want it to help you. You want it to do that kind of, that's kind of normal for business. If you're not able to look at, like, you know, we do shirts and stuff like that. And let's say out of 5 orders or out of, you know, 15 orders, one person comes to me and says, we got a problem. Well, we're going to look at it. We're going to put it on a back burner and be like, okay, I hear you. All right. And if it doesn't happen again, it's probably not us. It's probably them. If we do 15 orders and 10 of them got a problem, then we got a problem. I got a problem. We got to fix something. You know, there's obviously a problem on my side. But sometimes, I mean, just right back to what I said, if you walk around this earth and you think that there isn't anybody out there that's just maliciously going to wake up and want to take you out, you're not living. You got to be able to realize that stuff, it just happens. I mean, it just does. And there's kind of no, like the situation I just told you, there's no rhyme or reason as to why. I actually reached out to the girl and she never responded. Mind you, I've never spoken to her, but she apparently had an experience with me. So those are the situations where I'm like, no, there's no criticism here to fix. You're just being a bad person.
I've been on the side of that too, you know, and the rough part about this industry is it is a competitive industry and everybody's looking for a leg up. And, you know, it's rare to find, there's some people that are genuinely happy for you. And I mean this in all realms, whether you're the barrel racer producer, like whatever path you're on. But then you have people that can't stand to see you win. And I don't really understand that kind of mentality. But, you know, there are people that are like that. And, you know, and I think this every producer could say this, but, you know, there's been situations where I've had people just absolutely try to tear me down and essentially just try to get me to quit, you know, because I don't know why. I don't know why. But, you know,
they view you as a competition.
I guess so. And, you know, I've always been that person that I'm like, you know what, let's collaborate. Let's do something together. Like, let's make things better. But that's just not how, by and large, people think, and that's not how they like to work. So, you know, I'm very appreciative. You know, there's definitely a line between, you know, there's producers that see the value in working together to help everybody get better, and then there's ones that don't. And, you know, I'm so appreciative for the ones that have always tried to build me up and work with me. And, you know, I've been able, now that we're bigger, been able to do the same and try to help each other out, because, like, that's where true growth happens. It's the ones that try to tear you down. And, you know, I had a situation with, you know, a person, and I said, you know, I was kind of stuck in the mediator position. And I said, you know, I know that you don't like this person, and this person doesn't like you. And I was like, I need y'all to just, like, sit down and ask yourself, do you want to make this better? Do you want to get this problem resolved? And if the answer is no, then the only resolution is for you guys to just drop it. There's no sense in continuing on in this course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes that happens in production too. You can't please everybody, and you just got to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to have to take care of myself for a little bit. But, you know, in a perfect world, we could all get along, but that's not the way it works sometimes.
Well, I mean, there was a big hoopla I saw about this. Like, to me, if I was a producer, I would not try to schedule a race on top of another producer. That's my mentality. I would think, okay, if I try to compete with them on a date, I'm actually shooting myself in the foot. So why don't we just pick another date? And they can have theirs, and everybody can come to both races. But there was actually a big, and I didn't even realize this was a thing until I saw it on Facebook, and this was during COVID, where somebody finally kind of called somebody out on this behavior. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that they had to deal with that. But, I mean, again, common sense to me as a business owner would be like, okay, let's not schedule on top. Let's not do that, and let's find our own date. But you have to deal with those types of things.
That is a very difficult dance, you know, and, you know, for me, I kind of look at it differently than a lot of them do. Now, I do think that you should be respectful of a certain amount of distance between races, because, I mean, if you've got a race in Tennessee and then there's one in Oklahoma, you're not pulling the same crowds. So, like,
right.
I don't see that as a problem as far as, like, dates. But, you know, the other part, but it's just so complicated because, you know, you have, because I'll be honest, I've been on both sides of this situation, but, you know, we've all only got so many weekends in the year that we can have races, and trying to balance that in, because that's been one of the most difficult things for me, trying to find dates and get them filtered in, you know, with things that are already established. And then sometimes you don't even know that races exist, and then you find out you're on the same date. I mean, it's a very complicated thing to have to do. And it's definitely a tough thing for producers to have to work with. But, you know, I think everybody, at least in my area, everyone tries their best that they can to try to keep things, you know, either distance-wise or date-wise separated, because you can get too many on the same date. But that's a hard one for sure.
I could deal with that. That's what I was trying to get at, because I figured there was probably different facets to that, you know, because you are right. There are only so many weekends in a year. There's only so much you can do. That would be a hard dance, like you just said. I can imagine that would be hard to have to deal with that and not try to make people mad. Try to do it in good faith. Try to not be
it's so hard. But, you know, I also, you know, I think about this too, you know, with barrel racing in general. I don't really know any other businesses that actively get upset that there are other businesses that do the same things that they do, you know? So you sell t-shirts, there's a million other places that sell t-shirts. Now, I can definitely understand some being upset if someone steals your designs, because that is something that happens a lot, and it's not cool. Like, it's one of those things in you know, your business, it's like, you know, I created that with my own ideas and time and mind, and someone just ripping it off is inexcusable. But I'm sure you're not upset at other people that sell t-shirts. You know, there's a lot of people that sell t-shirts. Right. I have this one situation that, actually, it wasn't even over a date. It was over a concept, and the events were 13 months apart. And they weren't even really the same concept. Maybe like third cousins, you know, not even like, you know, brother and sister concepts. And they got upset at me, and I said, you know, I don't think that Lowe's or Home Depot yell at each other because they both sell 2x4s. I was like, I really feel like this is a little out of the ballpark. Like, we need to calm down. So, sometimes I do also lose my patience, and I'm like, come on, please. This is too much. It's 13 months. Like, it's they're not even, like, in the same ballpark of, like, events, you know? So
that's funny that you said that, because I had somebody who, you know, I just feel like there's lines in business, because you're right. There's millions of people that sell shirts. Don't lose sleep over it. Nobody cares, honestly.
Right.
I start caring when it's like I had this one girl buy stuff for me just so she could start her own business. And she did it shady, like. She did
nonchalant,
shady. And I'm like, you think that's good character?
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you come to me and go, hey, look, I'm going to start selling shirts, or I'm going to do this. What do you do? Then I have the ball in my park, and, you know, in my hands, and I can go, you know what? I don't know if I feel comfortable telling you this, or, yeah, this is what you need to do, or don't, you know, whatever. The ball's in my park. But to, like, it's almost like befriending somebody just to steal in their house so you can get in their house. And to me, that's sleazy. I don't respect that. Some people don't care, and that's fine. But I can't do business with somebody like that. I've got more respect for somebody who could just be upfront in your face, like, hey, I'm going to do what you do for a living. I got some questions. Would you talk to me?
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
You would earn more trust that way.
Yep. And I agree with you on that for sure.
Like, if they would have come to you and said, they probably didn't come to you. They probably was running their mouth, weren't they? And then you found out about it.
Well, what happened is we released the event, and then they started trying to start stuff on the event page. And I was like, I'm sorry that I don't do that. You know, things come up. And I'm a big believer that if you have something to say and you're upset about that I did with my production or whatever, the phone is always on. Like, you can call me, we can talk about it, and that line of communication is always open with me. I have no problem discussing grievances at all. What I do have a problem with is Facebook drama, because it just gets so construed just the wrong way, and I'm like, I will not engage with that. Like, you can call me and we can talk about this, but we're not going to do this back and forth and, you know, pitchforks and calling in the cavalry on my business page. Like, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, I stopped that, and I sent them a message, and I was like, hey, here's my phone number if you want to talk about it. And they have never picked up the phone. And I just won't do that stuff online. I think it's a slippery path.
No, total dib to you for that, because I agree. I've done the same thing. Like, hey, look, if you got a problem, then you can pick up the phone. If not, you're just doing this for attention, and then that's disrespectful altogether. I don't blame you one bit. I think that was
It hurts all of us, not just me, but it hurts the other party as well. And, you know, I think, and I'm kind of thinking about some of the questions that you had sent, you know, and we kind of talked about this earlier as well. You know, I think we kind of need to take control of the image of our barrel racing community a little bit. You know, they want to kind of say barrel racers are drama, or they're this or they're that. And I'm like, well, let's not feed into the image that we're being portrayed at, because, you know, for the most part, they're really great people. Like, you know, they give you the shirt off their back. Like, your horse got hurt, they're going to give you a bandage or some medicine or whatever it is that you need. Like, some of the best people I've ever met are barrel racers, but just a couple of them give this community the image that really isn't realistic when it's speaking about all barrel racers. So I think anything that we're doing to perpetuate that image, like a situation like that, is not a good thing to do. And I think people, in the moment, when something isn't going your way, people forget the big picture, I think. And, yeah. You know, we're all at some point responsible for the image that we put out for our industry. And I think that that's something that we all need to be aware of, especially when it comes to online interactions.
Yeah, and it's online has gotten to where it's not really it's hard to regulate anything on it. Like what you said with them bringing drama to your page. Well, the best thing that you can do is, well, because, I mean, there's only so much you can do with somebody that's got a keyboard in front of them. And what are you going to do, get in your car and go to their house and stop them? You know, it's hard to regulate when something like that just starts snowballing and starts, you know, going some type of way. And on the flip side, I will say this. Barrel racers are huge advocates. I got to give them credit for that, because a barrel racer is going to be the first one that's going to say, hey, that's not right. Hey, that's not right. And they're going to speak up about it. Whereas there are a lot of other disciplines in the horse industry that are a little more hush-hush. I'm not saying they would turn a blind eye, but, you know, most of the time when you see something online, I don't want to say drama, but it's bringing something to attention, and it's a barrel racer, you know, I got to give them credit for that. That is, they are the first ones to kind of, you know, call you out on some stuff. But yeah, some of it can be a little bit drama, excess drama, but that's anybody. You can't hold that just to them. I've seen all kinds of horse people do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's been situations where I'm like, oh, boy, that's not good. But then there's also been situations where it's like, okay, you know, if somebody had not said something, it just would have, you know, continued to not be done right or addressed. And, like, luckily, right. I've been very lucky to not have any of those situations for me. But, you know, those things do happen. But, you know, I think it just kind of falls back to that honest communication and just, I always wonder in these situations, you know, if you did your due diligence and you reached out to somebody and tried to resolve a situation, and then that still did not get the resolution that you needed. Like, I understand how people feel like they have nowhere else to go. Like, you see it a lot, you know, if people, unfortunately, there's so many ways to scam people on Facebook, or like when you're buying tack, use tack particularly. And, you know, people are like, well, you know, they took my money, but they didn't trip my bit. Like, I understand using online pressure to get that person to respond, because it does work. I get it, especially if you tried to communicate. But, you know, I always wonder about those situations, like, you know, did you reach out to that person privately first? Like, I feel like this should always be the first step, no matter what's going on.
Oh, yeah, no, they
don't
do that.
Like, keep it private. Like, that's the big thing. Keep it private as much as you can.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I'm so glad you're talking about this, because I'm that type of person that I'm not going to go public with it. I'm not going to do – I agree with what you're saying. You're right. There's certain situations, but we're not talking about those. You know, I'm the first that's going to send you a message and try to, like, talk about it privately and give you enough – actually give the other person enough respect to be like, hey, yo, look, this, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I agree with you. I'm glad you said that, because I think the same way too. But you do have people out there that don't do it like that. They just literally will just hop on the internet and put whatever they want out there, and so that they can get some type of leverage for, like, no reason, like literally no reason. Like, one girl, I was like, you realize there's no history of that, right? Like, you realize there's no history of what you're claiming I did. But by all means, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, there's been situations where I always try to give people a couple days, you know, because I'm like, in the moment they were upset, it was probably felt like a big deal, like they felt like they weren't treated well, like whatever it is, you know, offer communication, offer resolution, but within 3 days if they have not responded, I'm like, okay, it's time to move on. Like, there's a difference between airing a grievance and wanting to resolve it and just being mad. Like, there's a big difference. So, I don't know. I think you know, even going on with that a little more. I just wish that the communication that we had sometimes was better. Transparency, good communication, and just kind of handling ourselves, whether, you know, it's a competitor on up the line, that we're just kind of thinking about the repercussions that our words have on people and on businesses and on each other. Like, oh, man. I feel like I live in a little shelter kind of where I'm producing right now because, you know, I know most of these people. They've been with me since the beginning. You know, they're so kind to me. You know, they make sure I've got water. You know, they check in on me. They make sure to tell me we're doing a good job. Cause I'm a big words of affirmation person, you know, and like, I feel like I am very much so, but I feel like the people that I'm with right now are very much like family, you know, and, you know, we've one tradition that we've always had at Indian Creek. If there's somebody that barrel races with us quite often, you know, and they're part of our production in my mind, you know, if they lose a horse, my photography, BGY photography, they make these metal plaques and we send them out to the contestant that lost their horse. And she'll usually also send all of the pictures she has of that horse, you know, that she's ever taken. You know, and it's just, we have a really special community and a lot of these things that people go through, I think I've been really lucky because my people communicate with me. They're like, hey, this is a problem, or hey, I need this, or this, whatever it is. You know, I have gotten that courtesy of communication. But, you know, stepping out into some of these new places that we're going where I don't know these people, like, it's going to be a whole new ball game. So I'll be honest, I'm a little nervous about that this year, how we're going to be received. You know, it's one thing when they love you in your hometown. It's another thing when, you know, go to Hollywood and nobody knows who you are. You know what I mean?
I think, you know, that is scary, but I think you're going to have absolutely no problems because, you know, that you've got, you know, not for what it's worth. I feel like you got a good head on your shoulders, and I can relate to a lot of the things that you're saying. I mean, all you can do is do what you're doing because it's working, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just go out there and just be myself, whether that's good, bad, or ugly. I'm like, this is just who I am. Like, I don't have enough energy to pretend to be anything else. So, like, hopefully you like it. If you don't, sorry. My apologies.
Well, I mean, it's like a kind of, I guess, a common sense statement. You know, if people would, like you were talking about, how sometimes people are, they get in the emotion of the moment, they might be mad, whatever have you, the situation, da-da-da-da-da, and you said, you know, to kind of wait 3 days. If people would, like, sit down and stop for a second and come to the conclusion, you know, it's kind of a common sense statement. Your average person doesn't wake up and just go, okay, well, I'm just going to cause a problem.
Choose violence.
Yeah. I mean, like, your average person really don't. They might run their mouth about it, and they might say this and say that or whatever, but nobody really actually wants to have to deal with that. They really don't.
No.
And,
you know,
like, what you, like, I'm just agreeing with what you're saying. You know, if you would stop for a second and kind of let things die down, you'll come back down and realize that most of this stuff is not that big of a deal.
No, you know, I always try to apply the old saying, you know, is it going to matter tomorrow? Is it going to matter next week? You know, next month, next year, in 10 years? Like, is it even going, like, you know, what is the timeline on the significance of this? And most of these situations fall within that, like, you know, 1 week category. And yeah. With 1 week, you can usually fix it. So I'm kind of like, you know, let's hear them out. Because this, I think that's another thing that a lot of times these situations escalate is because just in general, not even just barrel racing, but life, you know, people don't feel like they're being heard and, or that their opinions are important. So like I have found that when I am talking to somebody and they're upset and I just listen to them and validate them and then work on the problem, it literally changes the whole tone because people expect, and that's a weird, it's kind of a weird expectation. I didn't really expect this to go down to, like, you know, human psychology in this conversation, but, you know, people just, but I mean, people just expect, like, when someone comes to my office and something's wrong and they're, you know, and their feelings are valid because of whatever's going on, mm-hmm. and they're expecting me to return that energy and be upset or deny them or not be helpful. And when I'm like, okay, that's a problem. What can we do for you? The deflation that physically happens in these people is incredible because they are so unaccustomed to being helped and listened to in the barrel racing scene. And I don't know where they're going or what they're doing, but they're just like, you're going to help me? Yeah, of course. That's my job. And they're like, huh? And I've heard this statement a lot too. People are like, well, I was afraid to ask you. And I was like, I don't know why. I mean, I do not look at myself as a particularly intimidating person. I mean, if you met me in real life, you'd be like, you know, that is not the person that I'd be like, yeah, that one's scary. I don't want to talk to her because I promise you in real life, I don't carry any of that kind of energy at all. But, you know, it's just the people are so afraid to ask questions because they think that they're going to get treated a certain way. And, you know, I've been lucky. All the barrel races I go to, the most part, I'm always treated well, courteously. Like, I've never really been treated terribly by a production, so I don't know where this fear comes from. But people are just, I don't know, nervous to ask questions or scared that the answer is going to be no or they're going to be in trouble or be mad at them. I don't know what word you want to put in there, but that's a very, very shocking thing to me still. You know, I wouldn't even call it like a situation, but we had a small rule change for this year, which I really actually thought was going to be received very, very well. And I was actually really shocked that it was not received well. But it was because there was some misunderstanding of the rule in general. And I had multiple people that were like up in arms about this. And then I finally had someone reach out to me about it. And I was like, that's not what the rule means. And then all of a sudden they were like, oh, okay, wait, I'm sorry, this was not that big of a deal. But there was literally, I don't even know, 10, 20 people that were horribly upset with me because of this rule that they thought had been that we had implemented. And I was like, that's actually not what that means at all. And then they're like, oh, it's not a big deal. But 20 people were afraid to ask me. And I'm like, why though? So
do you think that comes from, that's really, you know what, the first thing when you said that, that might actually be a horse industry related thing, because I've talked about this before. Horse people, I don't think we mean to be this way, but we can be, which is why we are still such a very small industry. Like not even 1% of America owns a horse. Like 1.2 right. million people own horses, and there's 334 million people in the United States. So we're very small. Even though we're big, we're small. And
yep.
I think one of the reasons why we stay that way is, take aside the whole horse concept, an animal idea into sports, take that out. But horse people generally can be very judgy, and we can be very, like, quick to be, like, mock, bully, kind of just degrade a non-horse person's question. We saw that a lot during COVID because Yellowstone really heightened the industry. I don't care what anybody says about Yellowstone.
Yep.
The person would not have been there. And with that came non-horse people. And it during like 2020 and 2021, across all disciplines, not just barrel racers, but all of them, I constantly saw a non-horse person asking a question and a horse person just tearing them up one side and down the other. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, one, you can't grow a business like that, no matter what the business
no,
is.
Two, absolutely not.
That's probably why horse people, it's like you only have entry level people and then really good people. And it might be because we get to where it's ingrained in us, when we ask a question, you're going to be called stupid, or you're going to be called this, or you're going to be called that. Do you think that that has anything to do with it, or am I just thinking out loud here?
I mean, it could. You know, every year, and I have tried really hard to keep my production very available to everyone, because, like that concept that you're talking about right there, like, you know, we're fooling ourselves. You know, I was new blood at one time, you know, and I guess the first year I was just very much like in oblivion, and I was like, oh, yay, horses and barrel racing and rainbow tack, whatever, you know, and thought it was all great. But then as, you know, a couple years went by, you know, I started making friends and things, and then I started hearing some of the things that people said about me when I first started. And, of course, at that time we were friends and it was all a joke, but I'm thinking, man, if they had said those things to me when I first started, I would have quit. Like, I would have been like, wow, I don't belong here. I'm not good enough. Like, I would have definitely at that time, that person that I was then and just starting out, if those people had said those things to me, I would have not have stayed with it. And, you know, that's one of the most heartbreaking things for me to ever see is to see people like, that's why I don't barrel race anymore, or my kid quit because of this or that. And I'm just like, you know, that kills me, because I try so hard to not let that be the attitude and atmosphere of my productions. And, it is a problem, because, I mean, I guess I could also, you know, put myself in that judgy category, like, you know, if your backstrap is hanging down to their hocks, I'm judging you. All right? I'm doing it. And, you know,
I'm laughing because I've done the same thing. I've caught myself doing it, you know, and not, I guess, you know, you catch yourself doing it, not because it's not like a malicious thing. It's not like you just wake up and go, like what you just said. Okay.
Listen, if you got a low backstrap, I am after you, okay? You were on my list, no. But, right. You know, I think it is that we, what it really is, because this is actually one of my favorite things. I said if I had not gone into production, I really wish I would have gone to be a psychologist, because I love how the human mind works. But
I do too.
What it really is, we're looking at that horse, we're looking in that backstrap, and we're like, you're going to hurt that horse. So our judginess is actually from a place of concern for that animal. And if you think about all the things that barrel racers are judging other barrel racers or new horse people for, we're like, you're going to hurt your horse. But people don't say that, and they don't present that criticism that way. So it comes off as offensive.
Yeah, nail on the head right there. I think you just hit the nail on the head, because you're right. Like what I was saying like a little bit ago about how barrel racers are one of the first ones to advocate for the horse. Like I talked about this in one episode where the girl had the shocker thing and then saddle, and it was a big ordeal on the internet. So you saw nothing but barrel racers coming for her. I mean, like, you know, they were standing up for that animal. So we have to have people that do that. But you're right. I think it's kind of the way that it's like second nature for us to say something about that kind of stuff. There was a picture, what was it? Shania Twain, I think, was in it, and she didn't, hold on a second, what was it? She didn't have a saddle pad on her saddle or something, or somebody else had the halter on backwards or something.
I can already tell you what it was. It was Beyonce for her Cowboy Carter. That was AI 100%. Yeah, girl, well, she ain't no trick rider. She wasn't hanging off the side of that horse riding it. But, you know, people saw the image, and they were, like, picking it apart. And I'm like, it's AI. Like, calm down. You know she wasn't riding that horse like that. Good Lord. But, yeah, no saddle pad. The back straps were, like, behind the butt. You know, I don't even know how that saddle was put on. Halter over the bridle, you know, all them things. And I'm just like, guys,
Well, the horse girls ripped her a new one on the internet, because you are right. It was the album cover, and there's no saddle pad underneath there. And we just went to town on that. And, you know, on the other side of it, it's like, okay, you know what? You are Beyonce. You could have taken the time to learn before you did this.
I know, and that's just it, though. She's Beyonce. She could have called Classic Equine, and they would have hooked her up, you know? Like, come on, girl.
Exactly. I agree. You know, I agree with that. But on the other side, I was kind of talking about more like, you know, just people that don't know any better.
Yeah.
And it's really easy for us to just slam them when we could take it as an opportunity to be like, okay, you know what? You've never been around horses. Let me help you. But I always see people, you know, making fun and poking and being passive aggressive about stuff like that. And I'm like, look, you know, there are some people that generally want to learn. They want to get into the industry, regardless of how competitive it is and how much it costs and stuff. You know, we could be a little more welcoming, because it can be tough.
Oh, it can, you know, and I think, unfortunately, I feel like it's kind of a baptism of fire for every barrel racer. You know, you come in, and you're just like this little rosy-cheeked, innocent person that's never had any strife. And you're just like, I'm just going to ride my pony around some barrels. It's been my dream. And then you come in, and you make a couple of runs. And then you're like, well, I'm not clocking. And then you start learning about divisions. And you're like, wow, I ran really far off. And then people are like, what are you doing here? And then all of a sudden, your confidence starts nosediving. And then you're like, well, I don't have a nice saddle, and I don't have a nice horse, and my horse is running the 20, and a 14 won it. And then you get to this crossroad where you've either got this absolutely ridiculous amount of determination that you're like, no, I'm going to see this through, or you quit. And if you don't have any kind of support system around you being like, no, keep going, keep going, keep learning, keep going, you know, that person, it's real easy for them to just slip off. And, you know, the real tragedy there is that we literally lost another one. We lost another person that could have loved this sport for a lifetime because nobody was kind enough to say, hey, do you need help? Or cheer them on even when they went in. And, you know, I think that's a dynamic we really, the barrel racing industry really needs to visit. You know, we need to worry, like, and I'll even go back to Beyonce. I mean, kind of like Yellowstone. She got girls interested in cowboy hats that probably ain't even worn one before. You know, all of a sudden they were like, I like the Western industry. This is kind of neat. I like the fashion. I like this. I like that. And you know what? If they never put their leg around a horse, they still bought a pair of cinch jeans and helped boast our industry. And it's like, even though they may not be what we would call, quote unquote, our people, they can still be our people. Like, this should not be an exclusive club, because if you can get too exclusive and you can price yourself right out of the industry. So, you know, I wish there was a way for that outreach. That's one of my big things and kind of my driving force behind my company is, like, you know, there's a spot for you. And this is a place you can come learn. Like, we want all shapes, all sizes, all horses, all types of riders, because, like this is where, like, ideally, I want my people to come to my shows, and I want them to grow. I want them to come there, enjoy the shows, and win, and then I want them to feel like they can leave and go to a bigger, better show. Like, it gave them the confidence, that springboard to move on to the next thing. Like, that's really what I want. I mean, I hope someday that I'm like, I'm the big thing, but till then, I am more than happy to foster these people in barrel racing and give them the confidence that they need to go try big new things. Like, that's really what we should all be doing.
I agree. I agree 110%. I actually let a girl go that I sponsored because I caught her. I don't want to say caught, but she was in a group when this girl asked this question, and the way that she handled her answer to the girl, I thought to myself, you know, if that was my daughter, you're not going to talk to them that way. Or if that was my client or my whatever boarder or my person, my sister, my friend, you shouldn't talk to somebody like that who's just asking just a normal question, you know, like just a normal question about the industry. So, like, to me, I just don't, some of that just, there's no sense in being that way. So I'm glad you brought this up, because you are right. I think it's not just barrel racers. I think it's kind of everybody across the board, the whole entire industry. So I'm really glad you brought that up, and I'm glad that you have a place for those people to go to, and they can breathe. They can take a deep breath and just kind of chill out. Like, this isn't judgy. This isn't, nobody's going to rag you on the internet when you leave. It's okay. We're here to have fun.
Yep. I would say probably one of my crowning glories, and people are always astonished, but so we have this little local series called The Grit and Glam. And I mean, I say it's little, but I mean, it's nothing for us to run 200 horses in a day, and it's one day show. So it's grueling. But one of our
Holy cow, that's a lot.
I know. Wild. We're just like, where are all these people coming from? But anyway.
That's awesome,
so,
though.
It's great. But you know what 25% of those entries are?
What?
Peewees. Peewee.
Aww.
And I have a peewee class, and then I have a beginner class, which kind of suits, like, you know, your lead line ponies, or, like, truly, like, somebody. So I've got a colt that, you know, he's 4 this year. I'm going to put that sucker in the beginner class, because we're probably going to be trotting, because he's scared of, you know, his shadow. But he needs that, like, this is what a race atmosphere is kind of thing. So it kind of it's kind of a catch-all for people that are not ready for, like, a true open class, or they're not ready for peewees. But there will be 50 people just in the beginner and peewee class. I mean, it's insane. And we always give out, like, a small little prize or, like, candy or something at a gate. Like, the amount of money that I spend on peewee prizes is just astronomical, because we have so many. But, again, though, like, that's literally raising a whole generation right there.
Yep.
That's 50 more barrel racers for us in 5 to 10 years. Like, those are the people, like, that you need to make a place for. And, you know, I just hate that has kind of got lost a little bit. You know, all these...
Well,
great races and big things and big awards. They're fantastic. Like, I mean, I wish I had time to go to those shows. I really do. But we got to make sure we leave room for those people that are developing a love for the sport. Like, there's got to be a place for them too.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because you're right. You are absolutely right on about it. Because you, I mean,
time doesn't stand still. There's going to be another mm-hmm. generation. There's going to be more people coming up. You got to make sure that you take care of them.
I know. Got to spend about $85 on cookies every other weekend, but it's fine.
You said $85.
So my sister, she lives around the Amish community, and they have, like, these stores where they have, like, surplus food and stuff. They love to see me coming. They love it because they'll have, like, just crates of, like, cookies or, like, fruit roll-ups or, you know, candies, whatever it is. And I'm like, I'll take them all. And they're like, are you serious? I'm like, I'll take them all, and I'll be back next week. And they're like, okay.
I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome. It makes me want to come visit one of your races. I think it sounds
really
like
fun.
It would be a blast.
We have good candy, and I have good snacks. And also, I also attribute that to my success, because if you're well caffeinated and you have some candy, like, who's sad? Okay, I'm not. And if you are sad, you're the problem. Okay.
Right. If you argue caffeine and sugar, clearly something's wrong.
So you would ask me about one of my favorite races. That was one of the questions, and the candy made me think of it. So one thing that I've always been really big on in my races is hospitality, because I believe 100% that barrel racing is a hospitality industry, and I don't think a lot of people look at it that way. But if you think about it, you're building, like, this experience, this playing field, this, you know, good stall, good this, good that, good ground, whatever. But then, you know, most of us statistically are not going to win a check. So what do you have at the end of the weekend? So what you have is the experience of the race. So I really focus on that. So in December, we did this one race called the Wings and Waffles. And it literally, people were like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, we're going to have a hot wing competition, and then I'm going to serve waffles on Saturday. And they were like, all right, I guess. Originally, we were supposed to have a food truck that was supposed to come in and do the waffles, and they backed out on me. So I was like, okay. So I got, like, my own waffle mix and, like, little makers and everything. And, you know, we had several people sign up for the hot wings. The guy that won it, his name's Dalton, not a barrel racer. He literally came in. He couldn't have been 25 years old, more than that, young guy. Had a baby girl on each hip, you know, your Irish twins kind of situation. And he's over here cooking hot wings. And I mean, cooking them and cooking them and cooking them. And so the way that we did it was, like, you had to pay $1 per wing, you know. And if you liked the wings, you could, you know, you could buy more, or you could just, like, give them a big tip because you liked them. And uh-huh. he just sat there with his little, like, cut-out ice cream bucket. And every time he's like, did you like my wings? Did you like my wings? You know, the whole time. And he, like, crushed everybody. I mean, it was, like, landslide. And, you know, he's sitting here with his two baby girls, and he's just like, this was so much fun. He's like, are we going to do this again? Will you do this again? I was like, I mean, if you want to, sure. And he's like, I really need it. Because we got him a buckle. So he'd won this buckle, and his wife, like, won the barrel race on Sunday. And he's like, I got a buckle, and he did it. You know, so funny. But
that,
you know,
is really,
like,
that is fun.
It was fun, and it wasn't one of our bigger shows, because it was also during NFR week, so a lot of people were out of town. But, like, people had such a blast. And then Saturday, we put out all our waffle stuff, and, like, people are literally up hanging out with us at the office, getting their coffee, making their waffles, and everybody's just chatting, sitting around eating mini golden waffles. And I'm like, you know, it's just insane to me sometimes, because there's no rules in production, none. Like, you can literally do whatever you want. I'm just over here thinking, I'm like, over here running 500 head of horses, and people are eating waffles at the office. Like, I mean, really, it's just kind of like a little fantasy, you know?
It sounds like a good time to me.
It was. And everybody was so happy, you know, walking around eating hot wings and eating their waffles. And I'm like, well, this is not the dumbest idea I've ever had. I really thought it was, but it wasn't, actually.
Imagine his story when somebody goes, where did you get that buckle? And he goes, well, I made some hot wings.
Yeah. Well, I bumped into him this last weekend. We had a race at the same place, and I bumped into him, you know, and he asked me, are we going to do this again? And he was like, yeah. And so he, like, started giving me the big breakdown of all these different recipes and all these things. And he's like, which one do you think I should do? And I'm like, I don't even know, man, but, like, I'll eat them, whatever you got, just bring them. And he's like, great. Like, so pumped about it. But, you know, we just made another barrel racing fan. Like, he may never actually barrel race, but now he'll always be there.
Yeah, and chicken and waffles is great together anyway, so
It was. It was, like I said, I was like, this is really stupid, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I did it, and I was actually like, okay, this actually wasn't as stupid as I thought it was going to be, but okay, fine.
I think that's great. That's a great idea. Obviously, it worked. It, you know, may, I mean, it's, it keeps it, the, changes it up a little bit than just your normal.
Well, you know, and I think as far as like the experience part of it, you know, you want something to do because there's, you know, dads and boyfriends and husbands and kids, like you want them to have something to do too while you're waiting on mama to go barrel race, you know? So I'm mm-hmm. like, let's just kind of create this atmosphere that is like genuinely family friendly where everybody's got a little something to do. So it's been a good thing for us. I'm hoping we can continue that kind of momentum when we kind of get out of our little bubble, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, I think you do great, and I think that this has been an amazing conversation. I'm really glad that you took the time to talk about all of this with me. It makes me want to barrel race and get a waffle. It really does. I mean, like, I don't, why else would you want to go barrel race if you couldn't get some food?
That's what I mean. Like, you know what? My day was a crash. I knocked over all the barrels. I killed the gate person, but I got a waffle.
I would be so proud of that freaking buckle. You have no idea.
I'm telling you, like, it was just so cute, though, because, like, sorry, this is, like, literally one of my favorite stories from last year, but, you know, the guy had won the buckle, but I guess, like, he had a friend that was helping him, because, of course, he was juggling two little baby girls, and his wife messaged me, and she said, hey, can you tell me where you got that buckle, because my husband helped make the wings, and he's really disappointed because he wants one, too, so she, like, bought him a buckle that matched the one we got for Dalton. I was like, that is just, like, the best. I loved it. So he was like, I need a buckle, too. So he got one, and I was like, that's great. I was like, here's my order form, and here's the style, and here's my discount. Go buy him a buckle.
That's pretty awesome, actually. Yeah, that's really cool.
It was fun. It was. It says Hot Wings Champion on it or something like that, and it's got a chicken drumstick on it.
Well, so that's your favorite race is the wings and waffles race.
Yeah, I would say that's my favorite one to date. It was a blast.
But one that's coming up that we got coming up next is the Buttercup race.
Yeah, we have, well, our kickoff race is the Breakout, and then our biggest race to date is the Buttercup. Yep, that's the one.
And why is that called the Buttercup?
So I don't tell all my secrets as we've, you know, as we've established, but if you look at the names of most of my races, they are named for a very specific reason. I don't just name them things because that sounds cool. Like, there's usually a situation or meaning behind them. Buttercup was named because, I think it was last year we were doing our end of year, like, awards. And, I mean, I'm not the greatest public speaker. I mean, I can talk, but I'm not a very – I'll just say I'm not scripted. I'll put it that way. And we were about 2 hours into the presentation. I was getting pretty worn out at that point, and I was doing my staff recognition. And our announcer, Cameron Winland, it was time for me to, like, thank him. You know, it's kind of fun because he and I kind of, like, have grown up together, both the diamonds and the rust kind of thing. Like, that's a whole long story, too. I actually met him through his girlfriend. I met her one time at a race, and then a couple weeks after, she'd gotten a car wreck, and she lost part of her leg. And somebody had reached out to me and said, hey, this girl, you know, she's a barrel racer, she really needs help. And I'm like, yeah, let's see what we can do. We did a benefit for her, and that's where I met Cameron. And then he started working for me. Well, when you met him, I wish I would have saved some of our audio from yesterday because he came over last night. We were doing some recording for our races, like some recording for some of the videos and stuff. And, you know, he's just 23 years old, but he sounds like a 48-year-old, like, stock contractor announcing at the NFR. I mean, his voice just does not match his face at all. Like, he's just this young baby face thing, got this big old man voice, and he's, like, I mean, he's from Missouri, okay? He lives an hour from me. It sounds like he's from the Deep South. Like, I don't even know. Like, just such a cool voice. And anyway, you know, we're at this presentation, and I'm, like, winding it up. And I'm like, you know, we want to thank Cameron Winland Radio Action Productions for being our, you know, our prime announcer for the year with his buttery smooth voice and, you know, perfected vocals. And everyone just started busting up laughing. I don't know why I pulled butter out of the air. I don't know. It just came to me. So we named a race after it, naturally. It was pretty fun.
After the buttery voice.
His buttery smooth voice, and now it's just like a big joke. So, yeah,
voice. Those are the coolest things when you, like, what you said about how if you hear somebody's voice, you already have a preconceived kind of notion of what the person kind of looked like, age, and what they look like and stuff like that. It is kind of cool to see if you hear a voice of somebody and then you see who they are and it's not what you think it would be. Those are always funny.
You, if you need more podcast material, you really ought to reach out to Cameron. He is a riot. He is so funny. It took us like 2.5 hours to do what it should have taken an hour because we're all cracking up. So, you know, because we're real, you know, real big time now and we're moving in, you know, doing all this cool stuff. You know, he came over to my house with our audio lady, our BGY, and we were going to record, and we've got, you know, the big high ceilings in our living room, and she's like, you know, this probably isn't going to work, it's going to echo real bad. She's like, do you have a closet? And I was like, yeah. So we recorded all of her audio in my clothing last night so it wouldn't echo. The laptop set up on my shoe rack with my clothes so it wouldn't be so loud and echoey. And I was like, oh boy, we are really something. So.
You got to do what you got to do, man. There's no judgment on that. You got to do what you got to do. If people could see some of the things I had to do to get to where I'm at, you'd feel a lot better.
Yeah,